Hello. We're host Sully. We're going to experiment with all kinds of punk rock music here to dissect their careers in the indie music industry is none other than Downstrod's Darren Wilson.
Darren, the drummer for Downtrodden. Yes, sir. That is correct.
Yeah.
The name is spelled really weird, which we could get into.
That's why it rocks.
That was,
but I legit love the sound and vocals. And then we got none other than Fancy Mark's Mark Ball.
Hello. I'm trying to think of what kind of music career I have had at this point. This could be a real short conversation.
Jinxed and Black Cat Under a Blood Moon are your albums currently on Bandcamp.
Yeah. Also on all the streamers and stuff. That is kind of the interesting thing is like the way that bands and musicians were doing it when I was like a teenager or growing up is vastly, vastly different than how everybody else is doing it now. And there's like a million different ways you can potentially do it. Yeah, so this should be an interesting conversation because I think Darren and I have like two pretty different experiences in the music industry, if you want to call it that. Really, we're doing indie shows, but
well, and your paths have crossed. So
yeah.
Kudos to the power of friendship, you know.
Yep, the power of podcasting. It does bring people together occasionally. Darren actually came on when I was on a hiatus from the Midnight Horror Show. This is probably 7 or 8 years ago now or something. I took a little much needed break from that show after doing it for a long, long ass time. I think I've been podcasting for like 13 or 14 years at this point. And a lot of it was garbage, but I'm pretty proud of those years doing the Midnight Horror Show, like once a week, live 2-hour show way before Twitch or like any kind of live streaming stuff. It was such insane pain in the fucking ass to get a podcast on the airwaves live, like over, you know, like we use the
tune in. Everyone's saying do it, but no one's saying how to do it. And this is still in the mid stage of the internet where you're just like, oh, MySpace, it's a thing.
Yeah, it was all super brand new. And yeah, it's really just like within the last couple of years that this technology and stuff like Zoom has like kind of made this insanely easy for like anybody to be able to do like a podcast or any kind of over the internet kind of recording type stuff. Like, I don't know. It's been an interesting 10, 12 years or so.
Well, and so to circle around, let's start with you, Mark. When did it all begin? When did your love of music coincide with your career interests, let alone your free time and just all together, just making you realize this is part of my persona. This is who I am. This is what I am.
I would say it was in, so I'm like 37 now. It was probably in my early 20s. music has always been a huge part of my life. My parents both have giant record collections. They're old hippies. So they were big into record collecting. And so music was always kind of playing in our house. And I kind of discovered like metal and punk rock, like somewhere in my teen years. And that's primarily like where I went out on my own, I guess you could say, as far as my taste in music goes, because my parents hated that shit, but I had friends that were really into it.
So like Fleetwood Mac, you can go your own way.
Yes. other punk rock classics, such as that one. it was
interesting. I never thought of that. Hippies not liking punk rock. You would have thought it'd be a similar kind of rebellion.
But like my mom's big into like early 90s grunge. Like she's big into like in the Soul Asylums and, you know, the Alice in Chains and stuff like that. Which is interesting. Yeah. My mom was always, I don't think until like the last like 15, 20 years that she ever stopped discovering music that she was really into. So yeah, I definitely think I get that from my mom. And it's kind of the same thing with my taste in film. My mom, you know, grew up in the era of the the drive-in theaters and the golden
which
age
are also coming back.
Yeah.
I went to one during COVID.
It all circles back around eventually. But yeah, I was really kind of in my early 20s when I started getting really into like movie soundtracks, and a lot of my friends were starting to be able to afford like video equipment. And at some point I got asked to do some music for like a couple of like YouTube videos, basically. And that's kind of where my whole, I guess you'd call it, career started. Really more as a composer at the first start. The whole live aspect of it really didn't come pop up until about 2 years ago, when one of my friends was like, "Hey, you're still writing music, right? Do you want to come play some shows?" And I was
"Hey, better later than never."
Yeah. And I'd been writing music for quite a bit, like at that point. Like, I have a couple albums that are kind of lost on SoundCloud somewhere, which also weirdly is another thing that's come way back around. I thought everybody ditched SoundCloud.
I love so too.
It's kind of clunky.
Only yeah,
it's expensive
to
too.
Yeah.
But yeah, that especially electronic music, SoundCloud's making a
don't worry,
huge
Spotify
comeback
will,
apparently.
Spotify will take it over sooner or later, if not Bandcamp. So
yeah. So the live thing, the live thing was definitely a huge game changer and really changed the way. Because I read electronic music, so for a long time the music was all completely software based. Like, it was all written in box in the computer, and that was cool for many years, and I still enjoyed doing it that way, kind of. But there's also something really, really awesome about getting all these goofy fucking machines like daisy chained together with quarter inch cables, and you know, kind of just seeing what happens, basically. So seeing where it goes, like, I think electronic music lends itself really well to improvising and, you know, doing stuff on the fly, kind of. That's what really interests me. And I get the same kind of rush out of getting up on stage and doing shows as I do, or at least as I used to do, from like getting on podcasts and stuff. You know, it's live, it's like, all right, go. But
1000%. So Darren, man, you know, everyone knows you from the podcast world, the VD clinic and Psychosemantic, but you can't separate, you know, the podcast and music are all one big world for you. You like, you are always talking about your early upbringing and how it impacts your social life, politics, upbringing, and you know, you'll build it often into whatever the topic is that day too. And you're like, I went to a pub like this. I met some barflies like that. I met some scum of the earth. I can handle this. I'm gonna kick them out of here. But then seeing it again, contrasted in your punk rock music and your lyrics, you know, it's just, what do you make of it, other than having it be kind of a different cycles of your life and career?
Like, what do I make of the intersection between all the things that
you're talking about? You can't separate either chapter of your life from podcasting and music.
I mean, sometimes I usually had a microphone back at the drums with me. So when I first started podcasting, it was kind of like a extended version of me, you know, when everybody else is tuning on stage, I would just sort of start conversations with people and stuff like that. And
everyone's like, Darren's the cool guy, I gotta be the radio disc jockey now.
Yeah, the guy left it, you know, all my time sitting at the merch booth because we couldn't really afford a roadie, and the one time we did have a roadie, he just got drunk all the time.
cool dude
never helped carry much.
I was that dude for a friend's band for many years, and I got real drunk, but I did carry stuff. I was always helpful.
If you help carry stuff, it's
that makes
more useful.
It sold a lot of t-shirts,
up our drink tickets,
as long as you can crash at your hotel faster.
Oh, hotels. I think in total, all the time, all the different times touring, spent 2 or 3 nights total in a hotel. One was when we were in Nashville finishing an album. One was because we were on tour with another band. I actually sent you a picture from the last day of that tour, the Downtrodden Girlish Figure.
Yeah, those were designed the promo images. I was like, this is rad.
They got a hotel room twice, and we got to crash in there usually.
Sweet. No one asked any questions. You're like, get in, get out.
Yeah, we, it was usually all the other times. It was especially when we went on tour by ourselves and just played with different bands in each city. It was, announcing at the end of the night that you needed a place to crash, or getting a campsite, or somebody always had to sleep in the van anyway because too many people lost all their fucking gear. Somebody smashing and grabbing. Really early on, I think it was a quote from one of the guys from like Propagandhi or Dead Kennedys or something like that. But said, like, no matter how nice the neighborhood looks, there's going to be some nice person with a baseball bat to smash out your window and take as much gear as you can. So we always had somebody sleeping in the van. It was usually me, because I was usually the one who was either too drunk or had a girlfriend at home, so I didn't need to be partying with everybody else. at the certain time of night, I really have no idea how I got from the intersection of life to podcasting, except for if you've ever heard my show, Tangents Galore.
Yeah, but organized
that's
ones.
That's how I bring it back. it's just one continuum. I mean,
for me, the like, tangents come from being a raging pothead. Is like, it's an entirely different way of doing podcasting. I'm totally convinced, because I like both kinds. Like, I like a stream of consciousness show, kind of where it's real loosey-goosey, and I like the more scripted kind of, more thought out and planned out shit. I think I like doing the stream of consciousness, more loosey goosey type of shows like this one, but rather than like anything that's too planned. I don't know if Darren remembers like any of our trips, the summer trip episodes on Midnight Horror Show, where we would go to other countries and talk about movies, and there was like sound effects and like everything was real planned out ahead of time. And I think it was horribly stressful for fucking all of us, and they turned out great, but it was a lot of fucking work, and nobody was getting paid to do podcasts back then too. That's another huge fucking difference from when I first started doing all that to now, is like nobody was getting paid, like not that long ago, like even like 5 or 6 maybe years ago, nobody was getting paid to do this shit hardly.
And even if you have a Patreon, people still kind of want to kind of troll, like, hey, we want you to watch this piece of shit movie that we know you're gonna hate. I'm like, no. Want to do something at least constructive, as opposed to I hate my life right now.
Yeah. I like those shows too. I'm a big fan of bad cinema. I watch
they can be fun,
more than my fair share of shitty movies, especially on the Doing Nasty show. Like, probably 90% of those movies are fucking terrible, and about 10% of them are like either okayish or
podcast got like under the stairs. Yeah, a lot of those. So. When did you guys connect with a lot of the people who are on Legion Horror Podcasts, let alone notice that, hey, I'm into dark cinema, psychological mystery, and dark terror?
Legion Mark, Cinema. I would say you knew a lot of the people before I did.
Nice.
I've known Duncan. I was just thinking back to when Legion was called like the League of Extraordinary Podcasts, I believe.
Yeah, I think so. Yes.
Somebody's
on the laptop. Was starting it up, and yeah.
Yeah, and somebody's gonna be mad that I remember all that, because that goes back quite a ways. But I think, I don't know. It's been so long. It's been like almost a decade ago. I've definitely, Duncan, I've known
so much
like,
has changed in a decade.
Yeah, and I'm still friends with a lot of these people, like Duncan and Bo and Court and Doug Tilly and all these guys that like I kind of consider like my podcasting heroes. I've been lucky enough to podcast with all of them, more than a few times. So, it's been about a decade since I've known the majority of these people, and thankfully, all the good ones like Darren stuck around through all the insanity of the last 10 years.
That, and it's easier to dissect a podcast now instead of, it won't play, or maybe I didn't download it the right way.
That's very true.
Multiple
everybody
apps.
Gathering around the desktop in the one room.
Yeah, listening to it on high blast. No, no more of that. You can now take it on a portable device with you. Darren, how did you feel start getting comfortable just unleashing a narrative and pretty much coming up with a topical discussion every time?
With that, it like we said, it was sort of like the extension. You know, I started playing music when I was 13 or 14, and then things started slowing down a little while after 30. And, you know,
lucky.
and you sort of look around for, like, I don't know, like my girlfriend, now wife, was kind of like, you know, you're in a lot better mood when you're, you know, putting something out in some way.
Nice.
Instead of like stewing in your shit.
Brought you know, because probably out of
yeah,
your shell.
You know, so I fucked around with oil painting for a while.
It's so fun, isn't it?
Yeah, it's totally fun. I've got some horrible paintings.
I threw many of them away. Everyone was like, why? Why'd you throw it away? Why'd you throw away that self-portrait of yourself? I'm like, because I don't like how I don't look like that anymore.
I made it to get it out of my head, and now it's gone.
Exactly. I had a professor who hated how I used my oil paintings, and I was just like, see, this reminds me of that douchey professor. you get me? Art shouldn't remind you of a bad time.
And then, you know, I sort of started doing, I did a lot of commuting when I went back to school when music slowed down too, and finished my very useful degree. And
bachelor's?
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
A BA in English that used to be a journalism degree. And halfway through my degree, the academic advisor was like, just switch to this. That way you can translate it to grad school a lot better than a journalism specific degree, because regular journalism is dead. And that'll be
absolutely
a different conversation, a different place.
Trust me.
He's like, I'm going to level with you. Yeah. Okay.
My mother worked for the local Star Telegram here in Fort Worth. And when everything first started going digital, so during the 2010s, so she...
Okay. So preaching to the choir there.
Yes, but it doesn't make it any less true, given how you're just... We're still seeing it now. Is like, now I love seeing the regular articles on cord cutters, how there's just like... So essentially, you're still spending the same fucking amount of money you were when you first gave up cable. So what do you really want to give up? Since every network is going to gatekeep and prevent this from being on that versus this.
Yeah, I really wanted to go to film school right out of high school. And I'm really glad that I didn't, because, yeah, this would have been 2004 or 2005-ish.
I commend you. Oh. I went to film school, gained absolutely nothing.
I think it's all about timing, too, though.
It's timing, but... You shouldn't ever go to one where the biggest turnout is engineering and where professors are telling you, hey, you can take that class, but not this class, because I hate that professor. It's like, fuck you, dude.
Yeah.
Fuck you. And then, sort of hindrance. So yeah, there it is. I'm in the film department, but I'm in more of the theater classes because all the filmmakers are being snobs. I don't even like movies that look like this. And I'm like, I want to make Lawrence up freaking Arabia here and not whatever pretentious, overblown, plot twist-driven crap you want to do. But then it even got to where people would complain about how it looks and everything. It's like, well, depends on what master we're using and everything. It's just kind of like when you see music snobs, they're hearing something from a first like edition of a music. It's like, well, you're not listening to the remastered cut the way it's supposed to be heard. Given... I learned more about from taking those master classes that were taught by a few different celebs. And then on key number one, staging. Everything else you can figure out later, but staging is like what you got to worry about. I mean, you guys know this from a music standpoint, but it's everything from where are you in the radio booth versus where are you in the photography event. You know, it's just, and given how there's so many tutorials for everything now, there's so many ways to, again, cut the corner and still get the same essential stuff without feeling like a bastardized Cliff Notes. So and don't get me wrong, there's going to be something different every time. I mean, my father does webmastering still, and he went through the phase where people were trying to do it themselves.
Right. Or
people were paying heavily, but absolute douchebags with communication and time management. And so I'm sure you guys have had sleepless nights before. Like, what am I going to write? What am I going to perform? How am I going to get there in time? This and that. But for anyone, we always try to be an inspiring show and let other people just, we're not just progressive. We're rooting for the underdog. Given what devices we have now, a decade and a half later versus what we have then, what do you feel is that the biggest disposal for anyone trying to get into an entertainment career? It's more than just the degree. It's more than just who you know. And it's more than just where you are at that time. What do you think are the main factors that everyone's got to focus on to remind themselves, I want to do this?
Well, I think...
Go
for it. Nope.
Eeny, meeny, miny, mo. Okay.
All right.
Mark's going first. Right.
Like, one of my biggest hurdles, and one that hasn't really changed that much from 10 years ago, is just being able to get the word out. And I almost think it's like harder now that there's a billion different ways to get the word out about these things, whether it's through social media or, you know, just like your traditional kind of grassroots stuff of going out and asking people if they want to come to a show or hanging up flyers and stuff like that.
The site sharing does make a difference. It's like, hey, if you post it on Instagram, it goes on to Facebook. Perfect. Just what I need, instead of posting it five different times and driving myself crazy.
Yeah. And yeah, it's another thing that was way fucking harder to do back in the day. And I think to a degree is still tricky just because there's so much competition. Like everybody has, like, you know, a voice online, and that makes it hard to stand out amongst the crowd, basically. So that's still a little bit of a problem. I think the it's really hard to make money at any of this. Like, whether you're doing YouTube or, you know, making music or podcasting or whatnot, it is really insanely hard to make money off of doing all this stuff. So,
yeah,
I mean,
money, what money?
Yeah. I think the biggest piece of advice I would give to anybody that wants to get into this kind of stuff is do it, but check your expectations a little bit. Like, not everybody's going to be, you know, fucking Ryan's Toys making $20 million or whatever a year. In fact, most people don't make any money off of any of this stuff, which is also kind of true of running like a small business. Basically, you have to kind of look at it from that point of view. It can be either way. Like, I mean, you can just do it purely for the art, love of the art of it, or, you know, if you want to look to try to commodify it somehow. I mean, it's totally doable both ways. But yeah, I would say if you really, really, really love doing it, or you think that you might really love doing it, then do it. But don't expect to get anything out of it besides the enjoyment of doing it, which honestly, like, I would rather have the friends that I have and that have the experience of things I have because of podcasting and playing live music and stuff than any amount of money could ever buy, basically, which I know it sounds super sappy, and that's probably the cold medicine kicking in, but I found that true 10 years ago, and I find it true now.
I love this. This is electrifying. This is validation here, people. And I mean, this is why I started the podcast. I had my day job finally squared away. No one's bothering me. I can, you know, the check is clearing, but I'm having too much free time, not doing much of anything on those free days off. So I was like, okay, why not socialize, especially since you can't be in the room with everybody. But this is cool to know that, again, that, you know, this is a side business, but not necessarily a giant hustle. So you're stopping yourself from being disappointed, so to speak, while still feeling reward from unleashing some kind of vision. some kind of voice.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Darren, man. So again, going from band to band, and Downtrod is currently, I guess you could say, on hiatus.
Yeah, I'd say that's, yeah, I technically probably in that way. Or you could say we haven't done shit in years, and I just
still a banger of an album, randomly. Though.
Thank you. Yeah,
never
you
know, say never.
And we'll get to you guys' tracks and just the influence we're feeling from these vibes. And but I mean, do you feel freed up now, just knowing that you've kind of just been on a cool journey with, just again, just numerous individuals and your blood brothers for life, even though you're from different families, basically?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a blast. And like, to go off what you guys were saying about keeping your expectations realistic while shooting as far as you can go with what you're wanting to do, is like, you know, I've seen the country a number of times, but it's been kind of like on working vacations, you know, traveling around, driving around in car. You know, my parents were also sort of in the counterculture, so we drove around the country a lot when I was a kid.
Instead of going to Walt Disneyland, let's just tour around.
You know, we drove through New Mexico when I was four, and then, you know, 22 years later, I'm being creeped out by a guy in New Mexico after we got kicked out of a party with a bunch of nurses. Oh, or, you know, yeah, all the fun stuff with friends. And, you know, like my first band, the Downtrodden, which is my primary band, you know, as a drummer, I feel like a lot of drummers, especially one of my favorite drummers, Josh Freese, originally the drummer for the Vandals. He originally from the Vandals, but he's in the Foo Fighters now. He's played for Nine Inch Nails. Like, looking up to drummers like that, or, you know, there's the statute of limitations.
And you feel awesome knowing that they're in a bigger van, because you know they're probably satisfied, as opposed to they're famous and they'll never talk to me ever again.
Yeah, and it's just all sorts of cool people you meet, strangers you meet all over the place. And you know, seeing different people, or you know, you know, mainly got into punk rock when I was playing music, getting to go play CBGB before they closed.
Oh, it was one of those like
really,
nice.
Really cool things. And like, I weaseled my band onto the bill because we were on tour with a hardcore band from California and their drummer had to go home, but we didn't want the tour to end. So we canceled three shows and just hung out in our practice space for a week. And I learned sort of their set, but I had the set list in my headphones right before, and all these little fucking cheat notes, but they split their time with my band, because we had a show on the other side of New York that night. But it was kind of like, if we're going to combine the tour, I have one request. And I found the video of that.
Darren's request live.
Yeah. You know, it's like running around. It's like, oh, this is where Iggy Pop was. This is where Debbie Harry was. This is so fucking cool.
Side question. Did you ever see, it's canceled now after four seasons, Sammy Hagar's Roadshow?
No.
It was on Access TV. And he would go, he did exactly that. He would go to multiple concerts and describe who had played there in the past, and then end it with an interview.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah, you know, just traveling around the country, having fun. You're sort of working, but you're only working a couple hours a night. And then you're hanging out with people all over the place, finding weird things like some kids. We played in Idaho on the way back from a California stretch. And it was like the first band the kids had seen in like a month and a half.
There you go.
So all of the, you know, 15 to 20 something year olds came out and took us to see the gorge that Evel Knievel jumped or some shit. It's nice. Yeah, like having fun. And with the transferring from more music based to this sort of thing is, you know, it's like I was pissed off and political and wanted to talk, but felt weird and needed an icebreaker to be able to just like connect with people that I knew that I could connect with. And
I feel you. I'll never forget when those towers fell. And I was just, I felt alienated at school because I had very progressive people in my family. If we talked politics, we were still just very open about all sides of the equation. But I was just like, so, whoa. We're claiming to be America the Great. And here we are throwing all these, you know, homophobic slurs and anti-Islam, you know, hate speech around. This is not America, you know.
It's, yeah, it is and it isn't. It's what America says it isn't.
We live here, but we don't believe what we preach. So it's a false flag.
There's.
I actually walked to the record store after school on 9/11 of 2001.
Oh, yeah?
Freaky, yeah, right? Everyone has all this fear-mongering saying, go home, there's going to be people in the street killing you.
I walked to our local record store, Sonic Rainbow, and I bought, because I was like a sophomore in high school, keep in mind, so I'm like 15-ish, something like that. I bought the second Slipknot album, Iowa, which I still maintain is their best album, and they will never do a better album than that. And I bought System of a Down Toxicity, which is like one of the most like popular and insanely like political albums. Like the fact that that album went, you know, triple platinum or something is fucking mind-blowing. But a lot of it's when it came out, people like me were hungry for this shit at that point in time. My little sponge of a 15-year-old brain that was angry about things and didn't really understand why I was angry about things was just gobbling this shit up, like metal and punk rock, and it played a bigger role in shaping like kind of who I am today. And, you know, I definitely think I get some of that from my parents. They're very one might say they have a little problem with authority. I definitely
what punk rock and authority, those two go together.
We'll return after these messages.
The Jacked Up Review Show podcast is honored to be part of the Blind Knowledge Podcast Network. Join anytime, talk the talk, and enjoy yourselves. There's something enlightening for everyone with this crowd of cool cats. Check them out.
Hey, it's Brent Pope, the host of Breakfast with Brent Pope. You've seen me on some of your favorite TV shows saying things like, give it up, Jimmy, you gotta sink this putt to win. On Breakfast with Brent Pope, I sit down with guests from the entertainment world and we do it all over breakfast. Or should I say Breakfast? Every week on Breakfast, you get inside Hollywood info and tips, great breakfast recs and booty debates. Most of all, you get the most delightful 30 minutes of your week. So dig in, it's Breakfast time. Listen at Breakfast.com, Apple Podcasts, or wherever fine podcasts are found.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win Show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
Exactly. And yeah, in their day and age, it was stuff, you know, like the Grateful Dead or Fleetwood Mac. And by the time I came around, it was, you know, the later stages of the early 90s, like surf punk kind of movement with stuff like Fat Records and skate punk stuff again. Like that. So yeah, a lot of it's all about timing. Like this, sometimes like I don't really believe in luck, but I do believe in like sometimes you fucking just hit something like at the perfect time and it just explodes.
You guys definitely explode in your music here. Darren, I gotta come in just from this Downtrod album that was accessible, Blue Devil, I was getting a lot of the angry young adult angst of the Dropkick Murphys, and then America Lost kind of had a similar mentality, kind of like you two, where it's just like, get on with it, you know, nothing matters. And Citizen Sane is also kind of a Bad Religion almost take, just kind of just echo all your annoyances and fears on this stage.
Yeah, I definitely sort of politicized the people around me. Most of those songs were written by me and the guitar player, Aaron. And we, you know, talking about connecting with people and having fun, you know, we'd known each other since like day one, almost. I mean, he's like 4 months older than I am. And we grew up two houses apart. Started our first band.
Speak of the devil.
You know, in junior high. And, you know, kept playing together.
All
that was the only
Ohio?
Band we had together. But yeah, I was in a couple other random bands.
Up in Ohio?
Yeah, yeah. In Columbus area. And, you know, there was... Yeah. But, you know, it's just fun. Like I said, if you're... I heard a kid a couple houses down when I was walking to the bus stop the other day. There's a kid learning how to play the drums a couple houses down. And it's just like a really cool thing to hear somebody fighting through the awfulness of learning an instrument.
Oh,
because you can imagine how much fun and catharsis they're going to have eventually.
Yes.
And then thinking about my parents and remembering why I can only practice in my house when certain people were home.
it's rough.
But
drums are fucking crazy loud. My little brother was a drummer, and it was kind of the same thing. If we didn't have such a big house in my parents' house, like out growing up, where he had like the whole basement to himself to play drums, I don't know if my parents would have ever let him play drums.
Yeah, you hate to have that what if factor, because you're like, I don't want to even think of that not happening.
Yeah, for real. But it was a little less of a risk for me because my dad was a bass player in his earlier years.
So he understood. Okay, that's what teens do. It's not demonic music.
No.
You're not going with the scare of what everyone else says you should do with your kids.
Yeah. And, you know, like my mom came to a show once when I was 19 and tried to buy me some drinks or to celebrate. But I didn't know if drinking underage at the club would fuck my band over, you know, just little dumb things. Yeah, my mom's a weirdo. She probably doesn't even. She'll never hear this because I don't even think she has an email.
Oh, and, well, you know, just the way we like it, folks.
And, you know, like my dad, yeah, he was, he taught me how to be a protest medic. And, yeah, he ran for Congress a couple years ago because he was mad at the Democrat thinking he was too corporate. It's just, yeah, a lot of support. I guess sometimes in these conversations, I realize that, like, it was pretty lucky that my parents were like, oh, cool, you want to be in a band and put off going to college? Great.
I'll take it. Studies? Yeah. No, thank you.
Yeah. So, but I was fortunate in that way.
To anybody that's listening to this too, if you don't have that kind of support at home, I mean, that's obviously going to be like pretty discouraging. And for the most part, like as far as the entertainment industry goes, there's going to be people left and right telling you not to do this. So,
right. Well, and this is what we're finding out with all the health and fitness podcasts. Number one source of just anything, all the stands, Karens, let alone gatekeeping and bullying, all begins with insecurity.
Yeah.
What I'm afraid of, I must unleash my fear, share it with you, breed it into you.
Yeah. Well, for a lot of kids, it starts at home too. Like people's parents, like not being supportive or even
I don't
like
understand
their siblings
it,
or whatever.
Therefore, I think it sucks.
Which to those kids, I would be like, only you know what you want to do with your life. And as long as you understand the risks of the path of life that you want to take, then you should do what makes you happy. Cause we only live fucking once. So, if you don't have that kind of support at home, like if they're actively discouraging you to do this stuff, know that they're kind of doing it because they want what's best for you and they think they know what's best for you, but really only you know that. So I say fucking do what makes you happy.
Don't be a tool. Know you better than you.
Find people with some mosh pit hospitality. Somebody falls, pick them back up. You can help somebody get up, you help them.
Right? Being nice costs nothing, as we know.
Hand up costs nothing. Just got to wipe your hands off a little bit.
Absolutely. Okay, man, Mark. So you got to tell me a little bit more about these tracks on Fancy, Mark. These are awesome. Like, just the Black Cat Under the Moon. You're getting so many just what feel like, you know, video game walkthroughs and, you know, soundtracks. Like Ronin, I'm getting a total gory showdown kind of vibe, like a Mortal Kombat.
it's hard not to be. That's funny you say that, because I've heard the video game music comparison a few times, and I think
the Vampire Cyborg is a total cyberpunk.
it's hard not to be inspired by video game music if you're an electronic musician
preparing for the big boss.
we kind of grew up in the golden age of, you know, 8-bit and 12-bit
arcades. What's that? Yeah.
that's almost an extension of, you know, synthesizers became really popular in like the 70s and then the 80s. Mm-hmm. Like, it kind of, there's still a lot of electronic,
every other slasher movies using it.
Yeah, or, you know, companies like Nintendo or Sega are inventing whole entire fucking chips to make 16 bits worth of sound, which is wild to think about. But it's interesting. It's kind of the catch-22 of writing electronic music. The world is your fucking oyster. Like, you can literally sample anything, you can emulate any instrument, any sound, and it almost becomes like a writer's block thing where, like, you have too many choices. So, like, at some point, I kind of, especially with, yeah, that second album, Black Cat Under Blood Moon, I kind of tried to narrow down, be like, okay, I'm only gonna have a drum track, basically like a bass track and a lead track kind of deal.
Think of a game you would have played on computer games in the back, back in the day. Next time on Doom or Prince of Persia.
Definitely the John Carpenter Lost Themes albums were definitely a huge influence on me, because they're all songs that sound like fucking movie scores that, you know, for movies that don't exist, basically.
Oh yeah, Tekashi Mike's The Blob was a hoot to listen to, because it's like, yep, yeah, that is a total retro VHS, you know, cult underground kind of movie.
I've always been really interested in like industrial stuff and experimental stuff. Like the Silent Hill soundtracks were a fucking massive influence on me too. Those kind of hit me at just the right time.
Creepy. Yeah,
and it kind of just changes your idea of like what music really is. And yeah, like lately I've been super inspired by a lot of like noise rock stuff, or, you know, just like just stuff that thinks way outside the box, kind of.
You're listening to the actual beat and giving it a soul, as opposed to that sounds cool, let me add it.
Yeah, exactly. And so that first album, Jinxed, is kind of that was also another one that was like written more in box. The second album, Black Cat Under Blood Moon, is kind of written more for like a live setting. I wrote that right before I had a whole bunch of shows booked. So like, I was kind of, which is weird because I get booked on all kinds of different shows. I think I've played with like punk bands and metal bands kind of, and it usually goes over great, but I have played a couple like noise nights and like dance parties and stuff. And I'm always super curious, like how it's going to go. Like, how it's going to be received.
I got that tone, especially from the first album, Jinxed, where you're kind of like, let's have a fun time.
I don't title any of my songs until I'm right about to post them, basically, because at that point I have spent so much goddamn time with them that, like,
you know what it is now versus I don't know what I made back then, but it has nothing to do.
If I titled them like when I first started writing them, like, the, you know, the meaning and the everything about it changes so much throughout the course of writing a track, like any of those, that like it would be completely different. So I gotta really like spend a lot of time with the songs, like so much time, in fact, that by the time they get posted, I'm so fucking tired of hearing them, like I maybe never want to hear them again. Like that's another thing to keep in mind.
After every podcast I'm like, okay, the dominoes have fallen, I've done all the correcting, I've added all the hysterical audio clips with what the person's talking about, I've eliminated the stupid joke that went too far, or belching or burping that's gonna disrupt everything, just let it sit now.
you eventually spend so much time with it that like you maybe can't look at it as objectively as anybody else, basically.
If we fucked up, then we fucked up, but let me know in a year.
Right.
Or never, which then tells me, yeah, that didn't make any splash. So what do you guys recommend for just like motivations? Because like writing just like a book or poetry is a whole different deal, but like music writing, you know, like that's even, would you say that's a little harder because you're either trying to make it rhyme or trying to make it flow with the chorus in acoustics?
It's weird. I haven't thought about it.
It's not like a record executive who's like, repeat 5 times. Post.
Oh, yeah. No.
Print.
You do have some of those fears. I don't know. When I was a lot younger, I saw that movie, La Bamba.
Love you, Lou Diamond Phillips.
Yeah, yeah. And there's that part where he's doing his first recording studio. His first recording studio, doing his first recording. And he keeps getting stopped and started and stopped. And it's like, do that part over. It's not exactly right. So fortunately, I've never been in a studio situation like that. Maybe with some parts here and there. But for the most part, I got my, even on that recording that you had, I think that was, 12 or 14 songs. I think I got my drums done in 1 or 2 days. And the only other band I ever did any recordings with, they got me drunk before. Well, not drunk, but they made me drink before recording so I would be sloppier.
What?
Well, that was a band that was people from a bunch of different bands around the city. And we just sort of meshed together, and half our songs were making fun of other people in the scene. You know, did like a 30-second thrash cover of, was that Kris Kristofferson that wrote Me and Bobby McGee?
Oh, but geez.
Janis Joplin did it. I think that was who I thought wrote. Yeah. And we did a split 7-inch with a metal band in town, and they got like 2 songs or 3 songs on their side, and we figured out how to get 6 or 7 on ours. And so, yeah, I've never had a really harsh taskmaster in the studio. The bossiest person in my studio ever was the singer, and he, you know, paid for most of the studio time. So it's just kind of,
get those hours, baby.
Yep. You do your thing. Before,
Had a few different people who had kind of their own radio places. Long story short, it was internet radio, and their egos were big as hell. And they're like, hey, internet radio is going to become a thing. Never really quite became such a thing. But half the time I was like, I had to flake out. I'm like, yeah, these hours. Yeah, no, we can barely get a show done in an hour. Yeah, no. And that's also why I started my own podcast. I'm like, I was done bitching. I'm like, if I'm going to preach all this, then I better be able to do it myself, because I know there's going to be a lot of time that goes into it. There's going to be some interruptions from life.
Totally.
And I'm not going to bust my wallet to do it either. Nice. At a studio where I don't even respect the owner, you know?
Yeah, that's another thing I would tell young, you know, artists: use free shit as much as humanly possible. I have gotten so many hours of fucking productivity out of like Audacity, just, you know, bare bones audio recording type shit. Like,
Audacity rules. It's for everything. Use your
free shit. Yeah, that's where like 90% of podcasters start.
Had a good line of dialogue that I still use. I don't get along with him, but he had one good thing, which is, have there be a trade off. Instead of just, you fed me for the day, give me some new boom mics, you know, give me a new camera tricorder, you know. That's a cool trade-off. And well, it seems to be a lost art too. I see in some photography groups, people are still asking for trade for print. And it's just like, yeah, no, start putting a dollar on it. Just work at a reduced cost and then work up. Because value your time.
Yeah, totally.
And you can form some harmonious co-working arrangements. I know there's photography majors in school. You know, if you're friends with somebody in a band, make them a music video. There's a class project right there.
Exactly.
Got a lot of free photo shoots, and there is a music video somewhere. But this was, I don't even know where the guy is that made it.
Oh damn.
Yeah, I'll
track him down, hunt him. Don't kill him, just hunt him.
people working on audio engineering degrees.
Okay, well then I'll tell you this. If I'm going to travel anywhere, I will go to your hometown and shoot a music video for you.
There you go.
That's the only thing I pretty much want to do. I don't want to do a movie because I've been on so many that have been pieces of shit or never got done or were by amateurs who didn't value any human life. And I don't want to do short films, which just get thrown away and are never seen at even the festival. So a music video seems like a perfect compromise because you can pretty much just play with the internet algorithm and just have something to show people that's eye-catching.
Can be fun. And yeah, like Mark was saying, there's so much to do now. It's not really a level playing field because the thumb is on the scale for the corporations, always will be and always has been. But I mean, you can get people to see you if you're a live performer, you can get people to see you perform live before you even get there. I imagine there's people that do like tours on YouTube. And don't even leave their home studio. And I mean, a lot of people were experimenting during the COVID step backs.
It's a must. Yeah.
Yeah. Coming up with really cool ways to share the art. And it's cool seeing, you know, that live music is still alive and kicking. And I think always will, as long as. Yeah.
I don't
want to go down the dark timeline. Sorry. That'll be the other show.
It's always in a state of flux, and I think like being able to kind of go with the flow and learn new shit and like see what, you know, the majority of people, or especially young people, are into is kind of an invaluable skill too. Like you gotta kind of have your finger on the pulse too to know where people are going for their, you know, their favorite kind of art.
Make sure your heart is beating. Yeah. Make sure you're breathing, but yes, make sure you're beating too. So Mark had some cool inspiration saying how he was very John Carpenter influence. Darren, what dark movies would you say you're kind of influenced by in a way that make you say, you know what, I'll pay top dollar to see that?
Movies that I really go for.
Yeah, it seems like half the time people don't know what the genre really means. It's like you can be gothic and not necessarily scary. You can be gory and yet intelligent. And there's just always snobs that you got to avoid in these conventions where it's like, come on, guys, we all want the same thing, which is to have a fun time and learn something about the dangerous side of life.
Totally. Yeah. And I think I often said this, bringing my punk rock mentality to it is like, fuck the horror police. I don't think I've ever claimed something that I thought, well, it doesn't really matter because everything's subjective in that way. But like the things that I really go for. Yeah. Like They Live, speaking of John Carpenter, They Live and The Thing, and
perfect intro to The Cake Is a Lie. Body Snatchers might be around. Yeah.
Exactly. The Donald Sutherland Body Snatchers.
That's a good one.
And Parallax View. That's
there you go.
That's a thriller. That's not horror. I know.
He's right. Real life can be scary, like guys. That. Hell, yeah. Half these movies that are also sci-fi or action or dark comedy also got horror elements, like Evil Dead, one of the Star Treks, and Terminator. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like even other zombie movies and. I know Bo of Legion is a big Final Destination fan, and everyone always has their cam. Are you a Jason guy, Freddy guy, Myers guy?
Well, Freddy Krueger is from Ohio, so I feel like I'm, and so is John Carpenter, or not John Carpenter, Wes Craven. Sorry.
There you go. So you relate to it on that level too.
A little bit, and you know, I like the okay. One of my horrible oil paintings from finding the new me in my I'm not going on tour every summer kind of life is a painting of Jason looking in through a window.
Nice.
But I would say that Yeah, I don't know. I like how Freddy's a smartass. I don't like that he's a child molester.
I think everyone is on that mindset. I mean, you would hope there'd be a sane person who gets it, but then there's other people who don't even read for certain subtexts of these villains. I mean, I got back into horror in the 2000s when I started during college by watching a lot of cult movies. Like, I was really into The Wishmaster. And
oh, wow.
Now I've rediscovered Phantasm, and I understand even Cube. I understand this amount of multi-genre kind of movies, let alone films where someone was able to get their movie done on time, under budget, and fulfill their own vision. And I feel like that's kind of, we're seeing a bit of that, and then we're seeing other people who are kind of trying to just anger everybody for the sake of it, like have a insulting plot twist like M. Night, or just be derivative of the other, towards like, dude, do your own thing. You don't have to rip off Evil Dead for the billionth time. Just be you.
You know, I can't remember the last M. Night movie that I watched. I mean, I really loved, I remember I was blown away by Sixth Sense, like everybody was the first time they saw it.
I recommend the Glass trilogy, but there were some other ones where you're like, dude, did you really base the movie all around that? That's just, no, that doesn't work.
And I read a Knock at the Cabin?
Oh, yeah. I forgot it's based on a book. Yeah.
But I didn't watch the movie. So I don't know if I like that.
I noticed that too. I would go into book clubs and there'd always be a book snob. It was like, oh, this doesn't work because of this and that. I'm like, well, look at it this way. These chapters are deleted because they're not cinematic. Like Tom Bombadil's chapter in Lord of the Rings is deleted because at the end of this scene, he essentially says, I can't do shit for you. You got to leave. Right. Not very cinematic. That's killing
don't
time.
Don't fuck
for
with my
minutes.
Bees.
Don't fuck with my bees. Yeah. Keep the forest clean, you know, green. Yeah, it's interesting too how just stuff that works in a book is excessive and boring, or just flat out just feels like too workmanlike if you put it in a movie. If you take certain John Grisham stuff, is like where you see the vigilante fodder sneak in the gun to kill the rapist in the courtroom, that you kill the suspense right then and there versus in the movie where he comes out guns a-blazing, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And I figured that book, Knock at the Cabin, would translate well to the movie format, but there was at least one part that I was like, I need to know if this is in the movie, because it will make or break it for me, and it's near the end, so I'll have spent all that time, but I can't ask anybody, because either way,
they're going to spoil it, yeah.
Yeah, so I'll probably get around to it at some point.
Wait for the hype to die down, so you're like, okay, I'm ready to collect this. I mean, I do this with sequels, where I'm like, okay, there is no hurry.
Yeah, the movie's
the world's
around,
still going to be on fire when I wake up the next morning, so...
One that I have kind of a special connection to that was based on a book that's like, the book is radically different than the fucking movie, and I have a special connection to it because all the exteriors were shot about half an hour from where I live, is Starship Troopers.
Nice. Oh, totally.
Another, yeah, the book was written in like the 50s or something, and it's definitely kind of more of a pro-war kind of thing. And
I read it
thought about
war.
The movie when it came, yeah.
Absolutely. I read it in high school, and then I saw the movie edited. I'm like, the effects are good. I can't stand this nonsense. And then realizing, oh, but the book is technically fair, Nazi sympathizing. And then the movie, you know, it's like, I think everyone owes it. We've covered Paul Verhoeven on here before. Everyone owes it to even just see any of his Dutch work. And you can realize how some of it just doesn't come across too well with American eyes. Like, don't get me wrong, I saw Showgirls on VH1, so I didn't have any of the objective content that people were getting distracted by. I just thought, okay, it's making fun of the low lives in Vegas, but kind of doing it heavy-handed. So
right.
The sense or lack thereof was not lost on me. And same thing with Starship Troopers. You do, everyone who even hates it should just owe it to themselves to rewatch it. Even if you just want to make fun of, oh, they're making fun of Star Trek, or they're making fun of aliens here. It's like, just catch on to the little small things. But without fail, I mean, Darren and I have talked before about morons praising Joe Rogan and sharing InfoWar videos online. I still, without fail, you want to, Court goes to town talking about toxic YouTube fandom. Without fail, you want to look up a Starship Troopers scene, you're going to see someone who either takes the movie too serious, saying Dizzy and Johnny Rico forever, best couple ever, or you'll see other shit like, why didn't they just nuke the planet? I'm like, that's the point. They are incompetent as a whole. They want to kill their generation of people.
When did Wolfenstein get so woke?
Oh my yes. God. Yeah, there you go. Someone people. Else has got... And I'm woke as fuck, so I'm even more offended by it now than I was when I'm like, what does woke mean? What it, does it mean progressive? No one knows. It's almost like the one line in Anchorman. No one knows what it means. It's provocative. It's like, I'm done with it. I know you guys are too, and you're unleashing your commentary about it. It's like, man, this is like, it, I mean, it really costs no one extra to even listen to the commentary if you want to find extra sense in what's going on, if you want to have, but it's like, we don't want, we just have to keep encountering snobs and people who just aren't objective. It's like,
but without fail, was my film school was like audio commentaries and DVD extras, and I'm very sad that those are going the fucking wayside, because that was like,
Yeah.
It wasn't the pre-internet days, but it was the pre-internet in my house growing up days, because I don't think we had a computer until I was about 18 or so. So that's how I learned a lot about all of my favorite movies, was when those DVDs first started coming out from companies like Anchor Bay, and they're loaded with extras.
Some great ones, man. Especially the George Romero ones. It's like he has his like two earlier movies, Season of the Witch, which is almost like very much like Get Out, just talking about the elite class and how they're not so friendly to outsiders. And then it was cool because it also came with his episode of that Starz documentary show, The Directors. But yeah, so many commentary tracks are just lovely. I mean, Jim Wynorski and his B-movie schlock are hysterical, because half the time he's just making fun of, oh yeah, I got this actor, I borrowed this stock footage from this movie. Oh, and then making, ridiculing all his stupid mistakes he's made. The 24 ones are kind of funny because just for that TV show alone, like, they're made by Total Cinema buffs, so they're talking about all these stage level actors, how they edit and stage and even set off these, you know, political arguments and explosions. And then the other rest of the time, the actors are just letting F-bombs flip and kind of have it coming off as an R-rated Mystery Science Theater commentary. I'm gonna kiss you. Oh, yep, I just kissed you. But you like to say it's a lost art. It's just having that amount of interactivity.
Yeah, peek behind the curtain. You don't really get that these days.
Oh, totally. I see so many people say, I don't like it, it ruins the experience. I'm like, well, if you've seen it 20 times, you're really not. What are you changing? You know the ending and everything. You might as well figure out, why does this work?
Yeah, don't watch it the first time you watch the fucking thing.
Bingo. Why do I like? Why does the blood squirting in this movie create this comedic effect versus create this Argento level moment of claustrophobic, you know, creepiness, you know? Why does the way Scorsese colors it here versus affect how Hitchcock might have not shown it, but made you feel like you've seen it here, it's a lost art in and of itself, just dissecting. Why does this mentioned scene in Die Hard work better than other action movies, which just bore you with exposition and make you want to root for the bad guy because the hero is so bland? it's a process, but it's just I see it too with music. I see so many people are just like, I don't want to know how the cookie crumbles, I don't want to know this and that, or it all sounds the same. I'm like, now that is not true. You can't say it all sounds the same.
if you're listening to one station, one
record company,
one Spotify picked for you based on the last 1.5 songs you listened to, mix or whatever the fuck, does
there you go, shuffle
Pandora
shuffle
exist anymore?
Pandora exists, but I had to find out the hard way from my pal Cloyce, who drives trucks and listens to it all days. Look for a track, and then you kind of find all these B-sides and other deep tracks where you're like, oh, nice. Like, he literally found the entire soundtrack of Grand Theft Auto on there.
Oh, wow.
Just by searching for one track by one artist, and he generated similar stuff. He's like, see, it's like all these other podcasts and social media. It's reacting to the algorithm. That's what spawns the next Facebook ad and all that shit.
Yeah.
Versus you skip it and it still plays that awful song you didn't want to have played.
Speaking of which, did you watch the YouTube Effect movie yet?
I haven't yet. By Alex Winter.
Yeah.
Did you like it? I know.
I did.
Okay, perfect. Why do you think critics were kind of ho-hum about it?
You know, it wasn't like, holy shit, I didn't know that. It was kind of like, okay, see, I knew that. And it's, what, there's like that Ryan's Toy Review kid that Mark mentioned earlier about, I don't know if you know who that kid is. I do, because I have an 8-year-old son. And
Ryan's World on YouTube?
There was there was a couple months where he liked to watch his station. Now he's all into fucking like Minecraft videos on YouTube.
That's
pretty much all he's
going with, the different
rocking. He interviewed him, you know, somebody that worked at Google with the talking about the algorithm. There's some guy that used to be in a bunch of hate groups that sort of got out of it and now like works exposing people from hate groups online. A bunch
gotta
of other
get your hands just, dirty.
Yeah, and talking about the monetization of rage and panic and fear and other things like that. I still think my favorite Alex Winter movie is Freaked.
Oh, there you go. That's another one I see keep popping up, and it's interesting how spiritual a guy he is. He reminds me of some of these other actors who taken up directing, Fisher Stevens, some of these other guys who are just very spiritual, and you're just like, and they have like free 80s hit movies, a bunch of cult movies in the 90s and 2000s, and now they can do whatever they want now, you know?
Yeah.
And so, because they're just so lovely as people, I mean, you could probably say that about Paul Rubens, who we just lost recently, you know? And there was plenty of times where we didn't see him in anything because he was just working behind the scenes and dedicating his persona into cartoons and video games. And you're just like, yeah, but he had so many unrealized projects as well as so much realized potential. And to see that kind of a voice just kind of unify people is still just striking. Is like, see, like, I doubt Alex cares about if his movie made any money. He just wants a vision out there, you know?
That's what it seems like. I haven't left Twitter or whatever the fuck it's called. I've sort of watched
the artist formerly known as Twitter. Yeah.
I haven't updated my phone, so it still says Twitter.
Yeah. If they start forcing everyone to, you know, verify their profiles, I'll just finally say, you know, fuck you, Musk. You know, I'm just using it until I just stop encountering all these lovely people and starting these awesome topics and interviewing these celebs.
Then you'll go over to Blue Sky and start
My god. Blue Sky. Nope. Yeah. Not to be confused with the animation studio. This is not Ice Age.
Yeah, Blue Sky kind of sucks. There's like almost nobody on there quite yet, which I
also it's like Parler.
Yeah, it's missing all the things that I actually did kind of like about Twitter, which is, you know, being able to interact with people. There's not a lot of that going on there yet.
They're just doing it just to have more haterade. Oh, this has been a delight, gents. And I'm glad you're still finding your passion. And
thank you.
No negativity on this side of the aisle.
Wonder if it's greatly appreciated. It's always fun. You know, it's a bummer. You know, I've met a lot of people. I think I said this offline. Online, off mic. And that I've met so many people from cities that I've been to, but I didn't know them then. So it's a bit of a drag, man. But it's cool having these conversations, but it's not outside the bar.
You're catching up.
In a bunch loosely. Of cigarette smoke. And
What do you think your hairstyle is going to be in the future?
Me?
Yeah.
I mean, I've been rocking the mohawk for 20-ish years. So I think when it falls out, I'll just shave my head.
Perfect.
I think my kid wouldn't recognize me. I've had people walk past me on the street in the winter when I'm wearing a hat. You know, like whenever we're all bundled up. I'm like, hey, man. It's like, I don't fucking know you.
they got
really, it only happened once or twice, but yeah, it's like, I don't know who the fuck
you're that one guy on YouTube with a mohawk. Oh, well, I guess I'm him. I guess I'll sign his signatures so I don't make him look like an asshole to you. I always hear about that. Celebs getting mistaken for other people. They're just like, yeah, sure. I can't convince you otherwise. I got to interview Adonis Mrapis, who you might know as Quan Chi from that Mortal Kombat TV show.
Oh, and, cool.
And he's just talking about how just without fail, just at a drive-in, restaurant or something, people, for whatever reason, just how he spoke, they just thought he was Jean-Claude Van Damme. He's like, I guess you need me to sign something because I just want to order my freaking Happy Meal.
Could you sign it? What? Never in my life would I.
Yeah, never in my life.
You gotta say underwear, like it's going over a hill.
I had to interview him because he was also one of the best villains on the show 24. And he joked about how he would get seen by kids at Disney World. And he'd be like, your parents let you watch that show?
Do you think? Oh, yes. Parents will let kids watch lots of things.
And you get a sense of that with music, though, too, where they're like, yeah, they've heard every foul mouth, rap lyric or.
Oh, yeah, for real.
Stuff and
we saw a lot of youngsters at Wu-Tang, lots of kids.
Yeah, and your recent Wu-Tang
mention. I mean, Wu-Tang is for the children, as ODB said, right?
Yep.
I feel like people are getting less restrictive on ratings, especially because now half the time they don't even pick up on putting the explicit rating on something unless they're like, yeah, we got to put it there. It's a disclaimer.
Where is Tipper Gore these days?
I asked someone, one of my guests the other day, Anna, is just like, so is Megan Thee Stallion dirty rap or contemporary rap? And the answer is yes.
Totally.
But she's also, it was hard for me because I'm like, yeah, but she's very self-aware to where she's being satirical. And it's like, yeah, but still, it's pretty dirty. It's pretty sexy.
It bothers Ben Shapiro to no end.
Oh my God. I don't even know, even if I was the most fucked up, the government wronged me, dickhead, why would I want to listen to that incel? Like,
whiny is.
Have we ever thought about, or if we consider that it's probably some sort of health problem if she has a WAP? My wife never had a WAP, I'll tell you that.
Oh, my God. Even the Young Turks encountered him at a convention, debating panel, and they're like, yeah, I got to go with the crazies. And it's like, see, that's why I can't respect any of these fuckers. You know what lowest common denominator you are catering to. If you're so smart, you would probably be able to figure it out and have your own voice instead of, I'm going to be a pretender. I'm going to make up all the shit that Alex Jones hasn't covered yet.
He's one of those paths of the unsuccessful screenwriter.
Exactly.
That's what he wanted to do.
Someone in Hollywood wronged me, therefore I hate all liberals.
Yes. liberal Hollywood. That's totally keeping point. That's why I'm going to make these movies with all of the people who have been canceled, but still get work and haven't really changed their lives.
I'm sick of that. I'm sick of the comedians. The Jim Nortons of the world. No one find me funny because you suck. Happy? Didn't think so. You're so mean, and then go ahead and bash the transgender celeb. Oh, okay. I see, Mr. fucking prick.
Forgetting that comedy's not supposed to be about punching down, it's punching up.
There you go. Try telling that to Opie and Anthony, you'll be dead just trying to make any sense of those fuckers.
Are they still around?
They've split up and doing these feud, and again.
Oh,
some of the people on Compound Comedy seem to be nice and have gone into podcasting circles, but come on. If you got your start on Fox News, you already don't have any respect for me.
Yeah, that's a rough hole to dig out of, that place.
Yeah, I know. Remember when Megyn Kelly tried to do that? See, I'm a real journalist. And I'm bashing every celeb on my talk show. And it's like, yeah, okay, sure.
Yikes.
We joked about it before, just seeing all these other guys pretending to be the smartest tool in the shed. My father was trying to follow one of these scientists who was talking about what the agenda was in terms of how everyone got vaxxed and how there were different types of vaccine. And I was like, yeah, well, they might have been a bright guy, but if the only crowd they could cater to was Joe Rogan, then I don't believe any shit they said, even if it was true. Because, you know, how low do you have to stoop to get someone to listen to you?
Oh, man. Just asking questions, dude.
Oh, my God.
Jamie, look it up.
All right, look it up. Followed by an Adam Carolla. You're not changing anything.
It's all here on Wikipedia.
Right, yeah. Oh, Wikipedia, fake news. Oh. This has been great, Mark and Darren. Anything you guys would actually like to promote?
I'd like to promote starting a band. Go start a band if you want to. And check out Downtrodden, Downtrodden, because I don't know why we were just destined to be spelled wrong on flyers everywhere we went. And
Downtrodden.
I think my guitar player thought that it would be easier to trademark the name later on, which doesn't fucking matter.
Are you sure?
Yeah, look up.
Are you sure? It might mean something. I think I saw the Illuminati in there sometimes.
Somewhere. Yes, in our symbolism. we did. No, that was a different. It wasn't our band's t-shirt. Somebody claimed to be a Satanist at a show in Bristol, Tennessee, and wanted to trade somebody a shirt for a shirt because they were sure they saw some sort of symbol in the thing. We definitely didn't hang out with him all night, but I sort of.
You're like, I guess I'll take it if it gets a sell.
Yeah, if you sell, you live off your merch on the road. And podcast wise, right now, mainly I would say check out Psychosemantic, one word.
Yep. I'm looking forward to what you cover next, because as you say, Congress is back in session after doing their usual reach arounds and procrastinating.
Yep. Fundraising and all that fun stuff leading up to the next round of fundraising. And so probably the next episode will be, if everything goes the way it goes, I'll be vague enough. So
you're not vague. Happening. You're just right.
Have a friend who just got back from Hawaii and is newly enraged about environmental politics. So we'll probably be doing that.
I look forward to that
soon here.
Might.
And yeah.
There's plenty of Save the Environment movies you can probably cover. You're like, this did a good job. Or this did On Deadly Ground where, what? Confusing. What? Yeah.
We'll go really out of left field and, or not left field, but harder to find, get like Meet the Applegates.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, it's a fun one that comes on Showtime still.
Oh, does it? I haven't seen it forever, but
yeah,
it was one of the like bunch of VHSs my dad had when I was in high school.
Lucky.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. Start a band, paint a picture, fucking check out my podcast in that order.
Yeah. All right.
I'll echo that same sentiment and say, if you live in a small town and you don't know enough other kids that are into the stuff that you're into to start like a band, use technology and start your own band. You can just do it as a one-man person. There's a zillion different ways to do everything. Or, you know, maybe you think music is like your art of choice, try painting a painting or making, you know, a short film or a music video or something. There's all kinds of different ways to express yourself and kind of get your voice out to people. And well, they might not all make you a bunch of money, but the feeling you'll get, the people you'll meet, will make it all worth the journey. And also check out Doing the Nasty. We're about three. Yes. We got three episodes left, I think. One of the movies on those.
That's it. The way he does it in his thing.
I did put together a Spotify playlist that's a little easier to find on there if you just search Doing the Nasty Season 2.
That's been our,
my main podcast project for about the last year, three-ish years, is getting through the all the Tier 3 video nasty lists, or tier movies. About 82 of them, I think, that were banned in the UK.
It was very eye-opening, especially with some of the ones Duncan was reacting to. He's like, this got banned? What?
Yeah, a lot of them are deadly boring.
Right?
We definitely, we talk about a lot on the shows.
It was like the poster scared him off or something.
Yeah, yeah. If you had an offensive box cover that had like a power tool on it or mentioned killing, or, you know, the first 5 minutes has like a titty in it or something, you're probably getting banned. So a lot of those
then
movies
you get
are...
into that interesting discussion is like, oh, too much nudity is bad, but oh, I can see people chopped up in virtually every way. That's not good. Oh, okay.
Exactly.
It's kind of like when you see comedians like, oh, so I can't make this joke, but you guys laughed at the dead kid joke. What the fuck is wrong with you guys?
Yeah, there's not a lot of sense in how that list was put together. And we try and dissect those movies as much as we can. A lot of them are just absolute fucking tortures. So, you know. But in one of these last three episodes,
like dead and buried, and
yeah, the thing is on one of these last couple episodes, probably paired up with some fucking awful piece of shit. But it's all over the place on that list. So it's been a fun it's been a fun journey over the last 3 years, and we're getting ready to wrap that guy up here pretty soon. So yeah, check that out.
Sweet. Lovely.
Thanks a lot for instigating this conversation, man.
Chat. Yeah, this was fun.
Initiating, not instigating. I hope I did not instigate. But yeah, it was just one of those of like, I gotta give you guys a moment in the sun. I need some positive vibes. We chatted with Legion Podcast Extraordinaire himself, Ricky Morgan, a month back too.
He's usually pretty positive.
Oh, always. But I had no idea that he, with his local, I knew he did rock music in his local Tennessee, but I had no idea he literally is like the Steve Perry of his of Journey, look alike and sound alike in his hometown. I'm like, no way. Okay. So we talked a lot about that and farm life. It's like, that's cool.
Nice.
Show everyone there's human stories to tell instead of have it be a giant corporate one.
Yes, this podcast was not written by AI.
Yes, we respect everybody. And so far, the strike's still suffering. The only ones who have not caved to the pressure have been Disney and Netflix. So now you know, guys, they don't value real people.
A24 has been allowed to work for a while now because
AMC, I saw
those things.
AMC just resumed all its TV show filming, so that tells you a lot.
I heard Drew Barrymore across the picket line today. I don't want to timestamp your episode. I'm not sure when this is going to come out.
It's timely in any way. Either way, this is eye-opening to see that people are finally putting a line in the sand, just saying, don't rip off my persona. Don't assault me. Don't rip me off. Don't cheat me of residuals.
Long time writers. Yeah. Anyway.
Kudos to Fran Drescher for being a real life nanny. So.
Right. Yeah. We'll support the workers. Yeah. Corporate always has more money and more power, even if it's people doing quote unquote better than you.
Bingo.
Everybody's got somebody with more power and more money over them.
Absolutely. Support your conventions. The last convention I think I went to that I was proud of was probably in 2014, because half the proceeds went to a dog charity. So look for some of those. I'm sure they're out there. Support your local comic book shop. Support your local, again, musicians. Support anybody who's got a dream. Help them realize it. Yeah. Don't be a glutton for punishment.
Rising tide lifts all boats. Another cliches I should have written down to make sure I had them right.
Yeah. Yeah, this boat will not sink. I'll give you that.
Follow Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a Jacked Up.